Well, thanks for being here tonight. Before I became a Christian, I drank a lot. In fact, typically I would drink until I passed out. And in describing that to people that I meet today, especially men, a lot of men kind of go, yeah, that's kind of how I drink too. But I still had a job, still went to work, still got things done, etc. And so some people might say, well, it looks like he has it pretty well together still. And it wasn't together. I grew up around alcohol. My mom and dad didn't drink much. Mom hardly ever had anything. And he typically would have something that when they would have a holiday party and he would mix drinks for the neighbors that came in. But I grew up around it. It was part of the culture that I lived in. I had uncles that were alcoholics. Two uncles, two of my mom's brothers were alcoholics. One, it was a story of one marriage after another, and people had a hard time keeping track of what kids went with what wife that he had had. The other one, I remember that he had a really good wife. She worked at Boeing and supported him for years, and seems like he was on top of things, and he was a carpenter up in Seattle, had built a number of houses up there, and they had a really good life. And he started taking classes at a local community college and met a woman. And she was married and he was married and they ran away together. And they came down to Silverton and he had some property down there and everyone kind of supported that and the family. Then he started drinking, she started drinking. And one night me and Cindy were married and went over to see them, see mom and dad. And I stumbled into my dad there having a conversation with my uncle, and he was crying because his wife had left him. And he ended up dying all by himself up at the Veterans Hospital. And so I've lived in the alcohol culture. I know what it's all about. And here's why I don't drink anymore. Here are my reasons why. Number one, I want to be wise. The Bible repeatedly reminds me that Satan is out there like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And that's a reality, 1 Peter 5:8. And it reminds me that I'm going to be tempted repeatedly, 1 Corinthians 10:13. I'm also going to be tested by life, James chapter 1, verse 12. Not only that, but there are people out there that do not have my best interests at heart, and they're going to try to deceive me. In the book of Romans chapter 16 and in verse 18, "For such men are slaves not of our Lord Jesus Christ, but of their own appetites, and by their smooth and flattering speech they deceive the hearts of the unsuspecting." That we're all going to run into people like that, that are going to try to lead us astray. Moment by moment, I need to be testing things. Is it good or bad? Prove all things, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And in order to do that, I need to be sober-minded. In 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 34, Paul tells the Corinthians, "Become sober-minded as you ought and stop sinning." Then he says, "Some have no knowledge of God. I speak to your shame." That is, there are people around you that don't know about God and you know them, and you should be embarrassed by the fact that you've got people around you that don't know about God and you do. Someone's not doing their job. Someone's not doing their job. Someone needs to tell them about God and you have the information. I think of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 4, there's a number of passages that speak of being sober-minded. "But you, brethren, are not in darkness that the day should overtake you like a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of day. We are not of night nor of the darkness. So let us not sleep as others do. Let us be alert and sober." And I think of 1 Peter chapter 1 and in verse 13, the same sort of emphasis there on sober-minded. "Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." It is common knowledge that alcohol interferes with the brain's communication pathways and can affect the way the brain looks and works. These disruptions can change mood and behavior and make it harder to think clearly and move with coordination. And that's why that's the whole, you don't drive while you're drinking. Because it's common knowledge that you start drinking and you don't have the judgment, you don't have the coordination that you had prior to starting, they have those drinks. People know that. In fact, on the motorcycle rides that me and Cindy go on, there is a zero alcohol tolerance policy. Not even one drink is allowed. If we go to a restaurant and someone orders a beer, someone from the club goes up and says, you can drink that, but you do, you're out of the ride. You're not with us anymore. They are very stringent on that, and these are biker people, but they realize that it's not a good idea even to have one beer when you're riding in formation with a group of motorcycles, that you're impaired on some level. Of course, the Bible agrees with that, and here's one of the things. There's a couple of passages in Proverbs, but here's one that maybe we don't read as much. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 4. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for rulers to desire strong drink. For they will drink and forget what is decreed, and pervert the rights of all the afflicted. You lose your judgment, you lose your perspective. Alcohol immediately goes after our good judgment, my good judgment. And no one who lives in a world where Satan's roaming about can afford, in my thoughts, I don't think I can afford to have my senses dulled when eternity is literally on the line. I was reading just today, I picked up the book on American road trips. And a lot of these road trips are road trips where you don't do the interstates. They're like road trips that do the roads that go from Canada down, you know, to Texas, or Canada down to Mexico. There are these roads that lead to nowhere sort of road trips, like a lot of little town sort of road trips. One starts up in Maine at Mount Washington, and it's a road trip that seeks to follow the Appalachian Trail as much as possible. Mount Washington is like 6,000 feet high, not very tall for a mountain. I mean, wouldn't be much of a mountain out here when we have mountains that are like 11,000 feet tall. Mount Washington has the most dangerous weather, it's in Maine, on the planet. It's even more dangerous than Mount Everest and Antarctica. The highest recorded wind speeds ever recorded on the planet were recorded at Mount Washington in Maine, 6,000 feet, 230 miles an hour. You will start out the hike up there. You got your sunscreen on. Before you know it, it is 10 degrees and it's snowing. And it can snow on Mount Washington anytime. Doesn't matter what the month is. And people that hike, and people die every year. Well, it's July, it's August. I mean, it's sunny. People die every year of exposure. And you're just told, if you do that, if you go up there, and you might start out in shorts, you might want to take your rain gear and your wool sweater and all of that gear with you. Because you never know, by the time you get up a couple thousand feet, you may be in 10 degree weather where people below you are having a picnic in the sun. You just don't know what it's going to be. And to me, the Christian life is like a hike up Mount Washington. Have your rain gear with you. You have everything you need, right? Don't just head out in shorts and a shirt, but have everything you need. And that's one reason I don't drink, because I am in this hike up Mount Washington in life, and I need to have my wits about me. And part of life can be dangerous. I don't drink because I feel it would prevent me from growing as a Christian. It would prevent my maturity. The Bible urges us to come to Jesus with our problems, our stresses, our worries, our cares, our anxieties. Now, if you're young here, you might say, well, Mark, you know, you're almost 60. You probably don't have all the cares that a young person has. Your life is probably kind of smoothed out. You've got your career and things like that. You got your house. There's a lot of things that you don't have to worry about. I hate to break it to you, but I have bigger stresses in my life than I've ever had before. They don't get smaller. Now, there are certain things I don't worry about anymore because I'm a Christian. But I want to tell you that the stresses in my life now are bigger than anything I experienced at 20 because of what's at stake now. And maybe because being a Christian, that you're dealing with people's souls too. That can be really stressful. And you're dealing with your own as well. And so there's still a lot of stresses and anxieties on someone as you get older.
And to me, to turn to alcohol, because if I was drinking, I would turn to alcohol for, you know, a little bit of stress relief, a little bit of thing to take the edge off. And I think a lot of people do that. In the book of Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And to me, I would only be preventing my own personal growth, spiritual, mental, emotional, if I relied upon alcohol, because I know I would, for stress relief, instead of prayer. And it's frustrating sometimes when people are going through something and say, boy, I could really use a drink right now. Really could use a glass of wine right now. I would love to hear people say, I could really use some time alone in God, with God in prayer right now. I could really use time in the Word right now. I could really use time with another brother or sister in Christ right now to clear my head. And so instead of a drink, that's what I'm seeking to do. To me also, I think alcohol creates what is not authentic. Clearly, it brings relaxation. It brings a certain amount of relaxation and stress relief. But it never lasts. And couples that depend on alcohol to put them in a romantic mood are opting for a romance that is not genuine. And people who drink so they can find courage to say or do something are not being truly courageous. Alcohol may bring the feeling of instant courage or instant romantic feelings or stress relief, but such is only temporary. Alcohol only gives a false chemical, a new sense of peace, courage, and happiness, and that's why I don't do it. I want to know that whatever peace I have is real, and that I didn't cheat to get it. And to me, drinking is cheating to get certain things. I want to know that my wife really loves me, that she, Cindy, doesn't have a drink in order for her to be in the mood to be romantic. I want to know that it's real, the romance is real, and that my romance is real. You know, the big thing before I was a Christian about drinking was, how many drinks would it need for you to be interested in that woman over there? And I think women have the same thing. Okay, how many drinks would it take for me to find that guy attractive? I don't want to live in a world where no one's going to hug me or kiss me unless they've had a couple of drinks before that. I don't think that's very romantic. I don't think that's a good thing. I want to know that my wife really loves me, the romance in my marriage is real, not chemical induced, and that I really do have courage. That I really do have courage. Side note. I was thinking of this. I wanted to get this in. If you're here thinking that, if you're young and you're thinking like, I'm going to live my life, and then if at some time down the road when I'm diagnosed with an illness or disease like cancer, at that point I will get my life right with God. And I just want to tell you something about reality. Maybe years ago when people on their deathbed, you know, the deathbed conversion, but what I've been able to see of life, typically by the time you're diagnosed with like cancer and you go through treatment, and maybe it works, it doesn't, but now it's not working. And now by the time you get, I think, you're going to die, most people I know are already on morphine or something like that. And maybe that's one reason why we don't see a whole lot of people calling us like, hey, I'm dying and I need spiritual help, because most people that die today are drugged up when they die. And I think that's why. And so if you're thinking like, hey, I'll turn to God when I'm dying. You know what? And this is a frustration I ran into with the second man that my mom married. My dad died when I was like 20. And then years later, my mom remarried. Like 15 years later, my mom remarried. And then 4 months later, he died because he had cancer. And so I tried to get a Bible study with my mom and my stepdad. His name was Stan. And the trouble was, he wasn't dead yet. He could still walk around the house, okay? But the trouble was, with the medication he was on, when we would start studying the Bible, he would last about 10, 15 minutes. And then he'd nod off. And to me, by the time you're in that stage, I don't know if you can be saved. Because how can you learn the truth if your attention span is only 10 minutes at a shot? How do you do that? I mean, about the time you'd even start reading passages, you could tell that he would, you know, and he wasn't dead yet, and he wouldn't be dead for a while. And he could still get up and walk around the house, and he wasn't bedridden yet. But he was past the point of evangelism. And I think that's the reality of the world that we live in. So be careful about, I'm going to put it off. I don't know where the line of drunkenness is. And I don't know any passage in the Bible that tells us where the line of drunkenness is. And that's another reason that I'm not going to drink. There is no blood alcohol level in the Bible. It just doesn't exist. The Bible repeatedly condemns drunkenness. Do not get drunk with wine, Ephesians 5:18. It says drunkenness will prevent us from an eternity with Him. A number of passages along that line. But drunkenness is a much broader category than face down in the gutter, passed out. It's a bigger category than that. Certainly it includes that. Drunkenness is a progressive state. And Ephesians 5:18, do not get drunk with wine, is the idea, don't grow drunk. Indicating that it's a progressive state. And it's not simply, I'm either in it or not. It's a bigger condition than we realize that it is. It's a broader category than we realize. The problem with drinking while attempting to stop short of drunkenness is that alcohol keeps working toward a state of drunkenness even after I've started, even after my last drink. It's still working on me. Trying to drink with judgment, I always found was, and I was generous here, I said almost impossible. I found it was impossible. Because the first drink, you no longer had the judgment of the guy that hadn't had anything to drink yet. You were over here, you weren't over there anymore. And so try now to say, okay, I have one drink and I'm going to try to drink with judgment. Wait a minute now, your judgment's already impaired to a point. You're no longer the truly sober man. And I know that blood alcohol limits vary among state to state. But they're not God's definition of drunkenness. And I've been told that there are many alcohol-related accidents that happen when a person's blood alcohol content is far below 0.08. And all the information I see, and it's interesting sometimes that the world is more honest than we are. A good example of this would be, if you want to know what modest clothing is, or if you want to know what immodest clothing is, go to a jail and read all the forbidden clothing. Don't wear this. Go to a jail. Just go to a jail and clothing for female visitors or male visitors and look at that list and it will be incredibly honest. When you're dealing with the problem, a lot of times you're pretty honest about the whole thing. And to me, I've even seen a number of either commercials or billboards that say, driving with a buzz, that is drunk driving. And so a lot of times the world, if you ask the world, like, sometimes the world can be incredibly honest when it's actually dealing with the problem. And say, you know, here's the problem. And I think a number of people would not consider having a buzz to be drunk in our culture. Yeah, I kind of have a buzz, but I'm not drunk. But the world says, you know what? You got a buzz? That is drunk driving. And I don't, knowing that, but I don't find any passage that says drink with judgment. I don't find a passage that says that. And I don't find one that says just have a one or two drink limit. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 29 says, who has woe? Who has woe? Who has problems? I'm impressed with this next statement. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long over wine, those who go to take mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. The Bible's honest. The Bible says it may taste really good. All drinks do not taste bad. Some do. It may actually taste good. But don't be brought in by its alluring glamour. I mean, and the alcohol companies, boy, they know what to push as far as advertising. You got the beer that comes out of the ice with all the, you know, kind of the water coming down the side of it, and they open it up and it gets a little bit of frost coming off of that, and this beautiful mug and etc. They really know how to package it. Don't even look at it. One in every three families is disrupted by alcohol. Mine was. Alcoholics outnumber other drug addicts 10 to 1. One in 10 social drinkers will become an alcoholic. Alcohol is the number one drug problem in this country. Alcohol is the third cause of all deaths and the number one cause of death by drugs. It outnumbers all other drug deaths, 33 to 1. Alcohol causes at least 50% of all traffic deaths. Every day, 28 people in the United States die in alcohol-related vehicle accidents. In the time that we are here tonight, one person will die in an alcohol-related vehicle accident, one every 58 minutes. Men who have two drinks or more a day have a 70% higher death rate. Man, and that's just two. You know, it's interesting. When I go to the doctor to Providence, and when I go for my yearly checkup and they have you fill out the form, a couple of things to note. One is they ask you a lot of questions about, are you depressed? So it looks like they're trying to catch, like, depression and things like that. They never ask me about, do you bread? They never ask that, do you drink lemonade? They never ask me that question, right? Alcohol is always on the sheet. And how many drinks do you have? That's always on the sheet. They realize there's something dangerous about that substance. They don't ask me any questions about any other thing about what I eat or drink. That's the only one really they ask me about on the question sheet. Alcohol is responsible for 70% of drownings and chokings, 30% of all suicides are alcohol-related, 85% of all murders are drunk when they kill, over 50% of spousal abuse, falls, and fire deaths are alcohol-related. I remember Cindy in her domestic violence role. There was a meeting, and someone wanted to do like a fundraiser. They've done fundraisers before. We've been to them. They've done like an auction for different things that we've been to raise money for domestic violence awareness. But someone wanted to do one that was like a wine tasting or something like that. And one of the ladies, one of the advocates said, hey, you guys, every domestic call we go to is alcohol related. Really? Are we really going to do a wine tasting? Really? Every call we go to is alcohol related. And I'm not sure if they had it or not, but I thought that point was good. Hey, what are we doing here? What are we doing? It's part of the cause. It's part of every time we go, there it is. 50% of rapes are committed under the influence of alcohol. 70% of robberies. A Michigan study showed alcohol was involved in 55% of child abuse cases, 20% of all divorces, 40% of all court cases. The cost of alcohol abuse to taxpayers is 11 times that of revenues collected from alcohol sales. And when they said, we want marijuana to be legal, and the one argument was, think of all the money we're going to make. We should have looked at alcohol. Hey, we made $15. Yeah, and we just spent $150. Hey, you know, I mean, that we made a buck. Okay, we just spent $15. I think if you were a household, and every time you spent a dollar on something, every time you got a dollar from something, you spent $15. That's going to bankrupt you as a family. That 11-to-1 ratio. I find it challenging enough to control my head without adding a chemical in there, something that goes against my better, that helps my, hurts my judgment. And I also find, I don't know about you, controlling my tongue. James chapter 3, verse 6. The tongue is a fire of the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. Every species of beasts and birds, reptiles, creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father. With it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. Out of the same mouth come cursings and blessings. Matthew 12:36, Jesus said, you'll be judged by every careless word. If I'm going to be judged by everything I say, every careless word, one of the first things alcohol does is unloose your tongue. That's at least what I saw in my extended family. Now, no one's at my extended family gatherings, the holiday parties, no one fell down. No one passed out. But all of a sudden, when they start opening the alcohol, people say some really dumb things. And not very wise things. Long ago, Solomon said, your mind will utter perverse things. I don't really like the statement social drinking, because Satan really doesn't care if we're drunk and driving. he really doesn't care about that. I think what it is it's the recreational use of a drug. That's, I think, the more accurate term. To me, social drinking is kind of a polite way of talking about it, but really what it is, it's the recreational use of a drug. Timothy was told to take a little wine for his stomach's sake and his frequent infirmities, and that was in a culture where they did not have wines that had extra alcohol added to them, and that's also in a culture where if you had wine that had an alcoholic content, you would cut it with water, like three parts water to one part wine. And Timothy was a guy that was just drinking water. And Paul says, hey, take a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. I'm impressed that Timothy, even though he was under great pressure and stress, was never told to take a little wine for his pressures or stresses of life. Timothy was a Christian who would suffer persecution. He was a preacher. He was an evangelist. He had a lot of stresses on him. He was never told to take a little wine to relieve stress, but for a medical condition that he had. It is so easy to go to chemicals when we're discouraged, stressed, depressed, or just plain bored. And don't get me wrong, there are people that need to be on medications. But we're not talking about here about something like that. We're talking about the recreational use of a drug. Anytime we take a drug for a recreational use, we're asking for problems. A while back when Cindy was gone, I had some sciatica pain. I went to the doctor. He gave me a prescription that had no refills on it. It was one of those things like, no, you don't get it. No, you cannot have this refill. Now, if you said, Mark, what are you going to do tonight? I'm going to go home, turn on a movie, and pop a couple of those. Little cheese and crackers and a couple of those little pills. You would talk to me. You would talk to me about that. I don't think that's a good idea, Mark. You are not supposed to take, I'm a little depressed tonight. I'm going to go to that bottle and take me a couple of pills out of that. Or I'm a little bit stressed. Or I'm just bored. Anytime we do that, we're asking for trouble. If we're taking any medication recreationally, people would call us on it. So why does alcohol get us a free pass? Why does it just get this free pass? Because to me, it's the recreational use of a drug, and when you take any drug recreationally, you're only asking for problems. That's my thought on that. Also, 1 Corinthians 10:12. I also need to realize that, hey, Mark, take heed lest you fall. Take heed lest you fall. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. 1 Corinthians 10:12. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1. Wine is a mocker, strong drink a baller. Wine is going to make fun of you. In my lifetime, I've seen overconfidence ruin a number of people. One of the last professed Christians that attempted to justify his alcohol use and threw up in my face Jesus turning water to wine in John 2. And understand, when the Bible talks about wine, it's like the word cider. Only the context can tell you whether it has alcohol in it or not. And there are times that clearly the word wine in the Bible is talking about an alcoholic substance, like Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1.
There are other times that it's not talking about that, because in the Old Testament it talks about the new wine being in the cluster of the grape. Well, obviously that's not fermented. That's, and it's still hanging on the vine. Or Paul's instruction to Timothy. The last person that kind of argued that or tried to throw that up in my face is no longer a faithful Christian and is for all practical purposes an alcoholic. And take heed lest you fall. Take heed lest you fall. I've seen a number of professed Christian couples who started drinking and are now no longer married. I think if me and Cindy, if either one of us had started drinking, I'm not sure if we would be married today. Because you just do and say things. You just do and say things that you would not have done when you were sober. And I guess my thought is, maybe it's just I'm becoming an old grumpy man. I've just seen so much over my life. How many examples am I supposed to shrug off? That's my thought. How many times, because over my life as a Christian, I've seen one Christian after another that got into it and did not grow spiritually, that did not amount much to as a Christian. One couple after another that got into it, had marriage problems, etc., or ended up divorced. And I guess my thought as an evangelist is how much of that am I just supposed to say, that's only the weak ones? That's just the weak ones. How many examples am I supposed to personally shrug off? If someone seeks to argue that drinking some wine now and then has made them a more spiritual person, some people argue that. Remember that any time we lower our standards, we can, at least for a little while, think we're doing better than we really are. The lukewarm Laodiceans also thought they were doing really well. Then there's just the better use of my funds. Alcohol's not cheap. I remember being at Safeco Field. Four beers passed by me, $40 went the other way, and no change came back. And I was stunned by that. With so many needs around us, spending money on something that brings no benefit, but instead expensive consequences to the individual and society, I don't think that's good stewardship. I think there are greater needs out there, better use of my funds. Romans says in Romans chapter 14, it's good not to eat meat or to drink wine or do anything by which your brother stumbles. I want to clarify that some people try to say, well, you know, bacon's not good for either. That's not really what that's talking about. The meat in that chapter is either meat sacrificed to idols, or it is meat that, under the Old Testament law, a Jew was forbidden to eat. Now, as a Christian, you can eat it, but you have a conscience problem with it. It's been so much part of your life of not doing it that you have a hard time doing it now. That's what he's talking about there. He's not just talking about meat in general. Like, hamburger's dangerous too. He's not talking about that. He's talking about the type of meat sacrificed to idol, or meat that a person could have a conscience problem with because of their past in Judaism, that you just don't want to eat that right in front of them and cause them to stumble. You never know who will be addicted from their first drink. You just never know. You never know who you're dealing with. And so I don't want to cause somebody else to stumble. God wants us to be a spiritual family and to really improve one another and to be filled with the Spirit instead of being filled with that. Those are my reasons tonight. And so I wish you'd consider that and think about that. I preach on that because I care about what happens to people. And I've seen people get into it and it didn't go well. In fact, I don't know anyone today, I don't know anyone that I would consider a strong Christian that engages in it. Now, I don't know what everyone does in private. I don't know that. But when I've known about someone doing it, I've never seen someone do it and that they were what I would consider a strong Christian. I just haven't seen it happen.
If there's one here tonight that needs to make their life right with God, we're a loving family, to become a Christian. He that believeth and is baptized should be saved. If you need the prayers of the congregation, we're here to pray for one another. Satan's all after us. We all got targets on our back. We're all trying to live the Christian life and do the best that we can. And we're here for one another. As we stand, as we stand.